We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Dann in ihm gekommen Herren der drei schönste Balabatim in der Städtele. Die drei schönste Balabatim.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we will be featuring an interview with the Consul for Diplomatic Diplomacy from the State of Israel, serving the Midwest. That's quite a title, Mr. Ron Bierman. The portion of the week is the portion of Miket, which is Genesis 41 and following. We've got wonderful music for you. We opened up with the immortal Jan Pierce. How could you not go wrong? A wonderful story. Just amazing story at the end of the show. Stay through all the way through. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Hours after ordering the U.S. Embassy move to Jerusalem, President Trump signed another presidential waiver of the 1995 law requiring the embassy to be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, so it'll be at least another 6 months. In the aftermath of President Trump moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, teens threw rocks at Israeli security forces in Jerusalem and burned Israeli and American flags. A man carrying a Palestinian flag smashed windows of a kosher restaurant in Amsterdam. Security has been heightened at Jewish institutions around the world. Two Grad rockets were fired at southern Israel from Sinai. No injury or damage was reported. ISIS in Egypt is claiming responsibility. Two terrorists were arrested for the murder of IDF soldier Ron Yitzhak Kukia. Kukia was killed last week, as reported here on the Jewish Hour, while waiting for a bus in the Israeli city of Arad. The U.S. House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed the Taylor Force Act that would reduce U.S. funding for the Palestinian Authority unless they stop giving money to the family of killers of Israeli. Palestinians currently receive about $280 million annually from the United States. Former Argentine President Cristina Kirchner was arrested for covering up Iranian involvement in the 1994 bombing at the Buenos Aires Jewish Center that left 85 people dead. Kirchner allegedly received oil and trade benefits from Iran in exchange for signing a deal that would allow suspects to avoid prosecution. And some very good news. Cyprus, Greece, Israel, and Italy signed an agreement to build the world's largest underwater natural gas pipeline to supply Europe. Israel is now a major supplier of natural gas. Maybe we'll ask Mr. Bierman about that. And finally, a large swastika was spray-painted on the home of a Jewish family in Charlotte, North Carolina, days after the family put Hanukkah decorations on the house. There have been 17 reported acts of anti-Semitism in North Carolina this year compared to one last year. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up for your listening pleasure. This is Avram Fried and about half a dozen other Israeli artists. He was in Israel a couple weeks ago doing a concert, and some of that has hit the web. The piece is called Kiva Moed, when a time comes. Let's listen in to Avram Fried.
ופרוס חביבי עליי, ופרוס חביבי עליי, צוקת שלומך.
יגאל עינה, ופרוס חביבי עליי, ופרוס חביבי עליי, צוקת שלומך.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Mr. Ron Bierman, who is the consulate of the for public diplomacy for the Israeli consul serving the United States Midwest. How are you today, Ron?
I'm good. It's Moran. I'm very good.
Okay, we're sorry. Anyway, we had what in America seemed to be very historic. It was covered by the news all over the place and live conferences. And, of course, we're talking about the President Trump's moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, before we go into it, I spoke to some people, friends of mine who are living in Israel. To many of them, it seemed like a non sequitur. Like, you know, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel for 3,000 years, and we don't really need the permission of anybody outside of Israel to tell us who our capital is. So if you could really enlighten us, maybe why should we be getting excited about this, Moran?
First of all, I think that we should, and I think it's a historic day. As you said, and I agree, Jerusalem has been the capital of Israel long before there was Israel. Jerusalem is being the heart of Jewish people 3,000 years, and as you know, it's mentioned in prayers in the Israeli national anthem, in the Bible, of course, and in many other places. And this was the destination and the goal of many Jews in the diaspora for centuries. So in that regard, we don't need anybody else to tell us this is our capital. And of course, that today we have the Israeli government, the parliament, the Supreme Court, and all the ministries in Jerusalem. So we don't need anybody else to tell us this is the capital of Israel. But it is a historic day. A historic day, because we need the world to know it, and we need the world to recognize it, and we need our neighbors to recognize it, and it's important to us that the U.S., which is our greatest ally, and that the President of the United States says it clearly, and he is making sure that everybody knows that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel in the future as well. And I think that in any future peace agreement, Jerusalem should stay the capital of Israel. So in that regard, I think this is a positive decision when we think about negotiation and peace vis-a-vis the Palestinians.
Okay, so let me just ask you then, why do you think it's important? Let me just finish my question. If some country decides that they don't want to have their embassy in Washington, D.C., does it really matter to the Americans if they decide if they're going to put it, say, like in Baltimore or in New York City, or the first capital of the United States was Philadelphia? So why do the Israelis, why are they concerned of world opinion as to what they deem to be their capital?
First of all, I live there in Philadelphia, and I think it's a great city, but I think it doesn't matter where the capital is. It matters because words matter and symbols matter. And it's important to us as Israelis because it sends a message, which is the Jewish connection to Israel, basically. You know that Zionism, which in many different organizations, unfortunately, has become a very negative word. Zionism comes from the word Zion, which is another name for Jerusalem. So when the president decides to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and decides to start the process of moving the embassy to Jerusalem, he sends a message that the connection of the Jewish people to Jerusalem and to the state of Israel and to the Zionism, this is we are here to stay. I mean, we're here in Israel. We are here to stay. The Israelis will not leave Jerusalem in the future, and we can start now the negotiation after we know that Jerusalem will stay Israel's capital. So it's a very important message, not only because the embassy can be in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem or in any other city. It's not important the location of the embassy as a location, but it's important because of the message.
Understood. Okay. Okay, so now Mr. Maran Birman, who is the counsel for diplomatic public diplomacy at the Israeli consul in the serving the Midwest in Chicago, the very day after that the president declared that we're moving the capital, the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and recognizing Jerusalem as a capital, President Trump did what every other president did since President Clinton, every 6 months, signing a deferment for another 6 months with this whole deal of fulfilling this moving the capital business. So it seems like he, to me, like maybe he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Would you like to comment on the second part of this story?
So first of all, I know that, you know, moving an embassy, especially an American embassy, is a long process.
Oh, yeah, he said it was going to take years. I can understand and build a fortified complex and to acquire land. They're probably going to have to knock down buildings to put a place like this. You can't just go build a building in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem, the status of what would be needed for the security of a U.S. embassy. So that goes without saying. So why push it off? Just say, we'll do it. We're moving it, and it's going to be moved. And, you know, but to say we're not doing it for another 6 months. So I'm kind of confused. If you could clarify how the Israelis are handling that gesture.
So of course I can't speak for President Trump, but as the Israelis we see it, we first of all, it's very important to add the message that he declared that he recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and that he declared that the embassy will move to Jerusalem in the future, even if it takes years. And this is what's important to us. This is a process which involves not only, you know, the construction and planning, etc. It's a longer process than that, and maybe he would like to give, you know, our neighbors and other countries the time to get used to the fact. So for us, we are grateful for the president for this decision. And we will be happy to see the embassy actually moving to Jerusalem, whether it will take a year or 2 years or 3 years. We are certain that the president has sincere intentions when it gets to moving the embassy.
Mm-hmm. But if he keeps on signing these deferments, for example, because it just seems like, you know, it doesn't matter now at this point, and it takes, say, like 4 years for them to build this building, because it is going to be quite an intricate structure, and he gets voted out of office, but because he's been deferring, so then farfallen, as we say in this part of the world, the whole thing could just go right back to status quo, and the embassy remains in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, you know, when the administration changes, everything can change. Even if he will move the embassy tomorrow, then the next president, if it will be someone else, can decide something else. So we don't know. You know, in the Middle East, first of all, you are always there are always surprises, and nothing can be known in advance. But you know, Jerusalem has been there for 3,000 years, and we can wait another few years to see the embassy there. So in that regard, I think the most important thing is his recognition of Israel's of Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
Okay.
More than the actual moving the embassy.
Understood. Now, so in order for Jerusalem to become the recognized capital of the United States, what the President of the United States, as it's written in this 1995 bill, which was passed by Congress and signed by then U.S. President Clinton, is to do nothing. And for it not to go into effect, they had to sign a deferment for 6 months, which was what they all did. So President Trump, had he just done nothing, it would have automatically happened. But here, he made a whole big speech. It took over the radio over here. I personally don't have a television, so I wasn't seeing what was doing with the television stations. But I can imagine that anytime anything happens in Israel, it sort of really becomes big. big news in the United States, which we could talk about that another time. But then making it such a big splash, so already people were afraid of repercussions, were giving the anti-Semites another reason to act like anti-Semites to such an extent that even here in Detroit, Jewish institutions are reported in the news, were put on high alert, and police forces were contacted to please keep a vigil on Jewish-owned buildings. So wouldn't it not have been better had he just done nothing, Aaron?
So again, this is maybe a question for him, but you know, when you mentioned the protests and violence, and of course we know in Israel today is not a very peaceful day after the Friday prayers in many areas in Israel. There are uprisings, demonstrations, sometimes violent, but we can't let radicals decide on our policy, and they don't really need justifications for acting violently. You know, I don't think that this decision is what made people act violently against Israel or against Israelis or against Jews. This is not how we make decisions according to threats and violence and terror. So I think it was important. I think it sends a clear message to the world, to the Middle East, to the Palestinians. So this, I think, was very important. And unfortunately, the Middle East and many organizations and radicals don't need excuse to act violently.
Okay, maybe you can fill me in. This is a little bit esoteric, but the relationship that Israel has with Turkey is definitely very precarious. And I'm assuming that for many, many reasons, most of them being fiscally involved, that Israel really wants to be on good terms with Turkey. Yeah, would that be correct?
Definitely. And the trade between Israel and Turkey in the recent years, even in the year that the diplomatic relations and the political relations were not the best, were growing each year, because these are two countries that their economic cooperation and they just complete each other. Turkey has the abilities to produce things, and we have the abilities to for R&D. So it's a perfect match in that regard.
Okay, yeah. So now so let's go back to my question. So on Friday, after the Muslim prayers, Friday being the holiday, so there's all kinds of tremendous demonstrations in all over Turkey and all kinds of anti-Israel propaganda going around. And the prime minister himself basically saying something to the fact of, well, if this goes through, then we have no relations with Israel anymore.
So at this point, again, this was maybe expected after President Trump's decision. It's nothing official as of yet, so they didn't officially stop the diplomatic relations between Turkey and Israel. We heard that announcement from many Arab and Muslim countries, not all of them so rightly, but many of them denounced the decision. They said something about the relationship with Israel. By the way, we have to remember that this was not an Israeli decision. Israel was somewhat passive in that decision. This was a decision made by the American president. And still, we see people attacking Israel after that. And that's also, you know, an interesting question. Why is an American decision leading to attacks against Israel and more than that, against Jews, as we saw in other countries, Jews are attacked after this decision. So this is also a question, but I would suggest to wait and see. I don't think this decision will lead to disconnecting diplomatic relations between Israel and its neighbors.
Okay, now, so I've asked you many, many questions about the philosophy of the president in the United States. Let me ask you a question about the philosophy of Israel. In such a situation like this, where the Arab League, members of the Arab League, are all up in arms and they're jumping up and down and they're all getting hot and bothered, why doesn't Israel say, go on the offensive and say, well, listen, if you really want to help the Palestinians so much, why aren't you sending them more aid? Why aren't you helping them be developed in their own, in the land which they're occupying right now? Why don't you people take responsibility for your Arab brethren? What?
I agree. I think that...
You have to go tell your boss to do that, then.
Sorry?
My question was, why isn't Israel telling the Arab League this thing?
I don't think the Arab League would listen to Israel, but this is definitely something that Israeli leaders is saying. You know, we think those countries, and by the way, also many organizations outside of the Middle East, instead of focusing on what they call the occupation and what Israel does in the West Bank, they should focus on helping the Palestinian economy, helping the Palestinian people. You know, eventually even everyone in Israel and in other places, we want to see the Palestinian people flourish, and we want to see a successful Palestinian state, and we want to see a successful Palestinians. But many countries and organizations, instead of to help them, that they are trying to incite against Israel. And by the way, the Palestinians themselves, just an example, the Hamas, instead of taking the money and the aid that they get from Europe, from other countries, and use it to build terror tunnels and to build the rockets, they can use it to build hospitals and schools. So this goes not only to the Arab League, but this goes also to the Palestinians themselves.
Okay, so my question then remains, basically, Israel's losing the media war. There is so much sentiment because the Palestinians are perceived as the underdog, and human nature is we always want to root for the person who's like least likely to succeed, that they succeed. So the question then remains is, where's the Israeli media that's telling the world and getting the word out, and especially like on, say, college campuses where the BDS movements are so strong, that the Palestinians really are better off with the Israelis than if they were being ruled by the Ottomans or any other people who ruled the Mamluks going back all the way to the Romans? They're better off with the Israelis.
So me and my colleagues at the Foreign Ministry, as many other pro-Israel organizations, are very active in college campuses, in the media, in media outlets, many organizations, and meeting many people. And this is exactly what we do. But as you said, it's not an easy war. We are doing it. We are fighting for it. We can't tell the media what headline to give the story, or who to talk to and who not to talk to. We try to do our best to get the message to the media, to get the message to college campuses, to organizations, to students, to many people. But it's not an easy job, and I'll be honest, we are not always winning. I agree with what you said, that usually the public opinion prefers the underdog. So we have a hard work in that regard, but we try to do as much as we can. It's not the matter, like some people tell me, it's not the matter of taking the right YouTube video and showing it to the student, and the student will see this video and he will become an Israel supporter. It's not as simple as that, as I tell to many of my friends and family who ask me, why don't you just take this video and show it to them? It's years of you know, of disinformation. It's years of people not getting the right facts, not getting the full story, not getting the big picture, and it's very hard to change it, and it's a big challenge. But we do try to do our best in changing that, in educating people about Israel, because I think that one of the biggest challenges we have is that people don't have enough information about Israel. They don't know exactly the history of Israel. They don't know exactly where is Israel and where is the West Bank and what is the West Bank and what happened in the past and the terror and how complicated the Middle East is. So I think this is the biggest challenge. When people are not aware, it's very hard to make them change their opinion, because you have to start by giving them the full facts. So we are trying to do as much as we can about that.
Well, Hatzlacha Rabbi, you should have great success with it, I hope, if that's what you're working at.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Mr. Maron Bierman, who is the consul for public diplomacy for the Israeli consul in Chicago, serving in the Midwest. We are talking about the recent decision by the president to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The EU, the European Union, in all of its glory, didn't come out exactly with a favorable report, a response either to this move. In fact, it sounded rather scathing and a little bit, to me, it sounded a bit out of line. You know, like, why would they react so vehemently against such a thing? Could you comment on how Israel is officially reacting now to the EU's reaction?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
The European Union really reacted really badly to the announcement of the moving of the embassy. So the question is how does Israel officially feeling now towards the EU with this reaction?
I'm sorry, there was a disconnection. I couldn't hear you for a second. You were asking about the European Union?
Yes, and their reaction to what? Trump's
the reaction. Again, this is not a big surprise. You know that the European Union has not been very supportive of the Israeli policy in the last few years. It wasn't a big surprise, not from the European Union, not from other countries and organizations that thought this is not a good idea. We remain in our perspective that this is a very important historic day. We have to remember that during Israel history, there were many times that other countries were not supportive of what Israel does, and we had to decide what we do for ourselves and for the state of Israel. So unfortunately, this is not new that we don't get the full international support, but we still think that doesn't change the way we think and the way we see this issue.
Okay, good. The Czech Republic announced immediately following after Trump's announcement that they would follow suit and move their embassy as well to Jerusalem. Is Israel expecting, Czech Republic's not exactly what you'd call a major world player, but it is as significant because you do have another country that is saying, we're going to do this too. Does Israel expect any of the other countries to do this, say the ones who have been sort of like sympathizers, like Micronesia or any of those countries, to move as well sometime in the near future?
Definitely. We call to all countries that seek peace to join the United States and to, first of all, recognize Jerusalem as the capital and also to move their embassies. I don't think we'll see all 100 or 100 and something embassies moving to Jerusalem next week. But I think this is an important decision by the U.S. and another important decision by the Czech Republic, and we hope to see some other countries follow.
Here's a hypothetical. But what would you do if suddenly 190 countries said, we want to all move to Jerusalem, so now you have the problem with real estate in Jerusalem, and what are you going to do with all these empty embassies in Tel Aviv now? I mean, you know, so...
As many people have been to Israel know that many of the embassies in Tel Aviv are on Hayarkon Street, which is directly on the beach, and it's a beautiful place, and I'm sure that selling the real estate of the embassies will make those countries rich, because the real estate value in Tel Aviv is very expensive, and getting a building on the beach can be a lot of money. So maybe this is another idea for foreign countries to sell their properties on the beach in Tel Aviv. You know, if we can't convince them by the policy and the history and the Jewish connection to Jerusalem, maybe we can convince them by the value of the property. So that's a good idea, I think.
Okay, but Jerusalem for real estate is not exactly cheap either, but that's good. Okay, I'm done with asking this part. We have a couple of minutes. I did want to ask you about something I reported on the news, and that an agreement of understanding was signed between Cyprus, Greece, Italy, and Israel concerning the building of an underground pipeline for natural gas, which would then feed Europe natural gas, giving them another source that they shouldn't have to be so dependent on, say, Russian natural gas. Could you talk about a little bit, a couple of minutes, about the significance? And is Israel now a major world supplier of natural gas?
So, you know, up until a few years ago, Israelis and Israel diplomats, we used to say Israel is a very successful country, even though we don't have any natural resources. So today it's not true, because we do have, there was a very big discovery of natural gas in the Mediterranean, in Israeli waters in the Mediterranean. And Israel is becoming a very important actor in the natural gas field. So now we are using this gas that we found. It actually was found with the cooperation of an American company, Noble Energy, that is based in Houston, Texas. So now that we have this huge, it was, I think, the biggest discovery of natural gas in the last decade. And of course, we use it strategically as an energy, as a country with lots of energy and lots of natural gas. And as you mentioned, we use it for the neighbors, and we use it to strengthen our allies like Greece, like Cyprus, like Italy, and like other countries with that natural gas. So this was a very important finding strategically to Israel.
Okay, so let's talk about the economy. So has, like, the price of electricity gone down because now you can power your generators with the natural gas which was found?
Not yet. There was a very big legal process regarding this discovery, because this discovery was found by a private company. And Israeli law regarding taxes from natural gas discoveries was very old, and there was a petition to change the law so that the company will pay more taxes for the discovery. There was a big public debate what we should do with the gas and how much taxes the company should pay. So this kind of slowed things down. So currently the electricity price was not really decreasing, but I hope to see it in the future. And we still have a process of developing. It's not fully developed. There was a very big discovery, but there are other two smaller natural gas fields in the same area, so we have to develop them as well. And I hope that in the future it will lead to a smaller gas bill electricity bill for the people of Israel.
Okay, now a lot of that gas that you're talking about, which is this memorandum, would be going to the European Union, which till now has not been very friendly or, let's say, cold to the United States. Let's say with the natural gas, now that they'll be heating their homes with Israeli natural gas, could we assume that there'll be warmer relations? Or you have business is business, but listen, you know, they still have their foreign policy.
So, first of all, I'm sure this will have an effect on foreign policy. And we have to remember that even today, without the natural gas, many of their, not only in Europe, but all over the world, many of their cell phones have Israeli chips that were developed in Israel, their laptops, their computers. Waze is an Israeli invention. Thumbkey is an Israeli invention. Many medical devices are Israeli. Mobileye, the autonomous car technology that was recently bought by Intel for $15 billion, is an Israeli company. So even without the natural gas, people over the world use Israeli technologies, Israeli inventions every day, I think. Not all of them are aware, by the way, but we have to remember that Israel is beneficial to the world in many different fields. And almost every person in the world uses, in one way or another, an Israeli invention or technology in his life. So we have to remember that. I don't think it will change everybody's personal opinion about Israel, even if they'll know it. But it's a very important thing that we want more and more people to know.
Wonderful. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. Our guest today has been the Council for Public Diplomacy from the Israeli Embassy, the Israeli Consul in the Midwest in Chicago, which helps us here in Detroit, Mr. Meron Birman. I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing your insights, and we wish you Hatzlacha Rabba, continued success, and Happy Hanukkah coming up next week.
Thank you, Rabbi. Happy Hanukkah to you, too.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Hey, Shulfin, here you're listening to The Jewish Hour. I hope you feel as informed as I do. Up for your listening pleasure next, this is Chaim Yisrael, who's an Israeli singer. There is a genre of Israeli singers that these were people who, from what I understand, there's like a whole bunch of them, a dozen even or so, that were come from religious families. They themselves may have been, their grandparents might have been religious. If their parents became religious, they decided not to be religious. And then as they got older on, they went into the internment, they went into the entertainment business, and then became religious. The first one of these was Uri Zohar back in the 70s. And very interesting is because Israeli smoke, I think, they all talk like this. They have their voices down here. And when they sing like this. And it has a certain like resonance to it. So we have, this is Chaim Yisrael, who recently composed a song called Eshet Chayil, which means a woman of valor, which talks about how hard his wife works. It's a wonderful song. Let's listen.
בכל יום שישי אני קונה לך פרחים וחלה מתוקה בוחר בקפידה מפירות העונה ביין אדום קול הרמונים ונרגש בכל יום שישי אני אתבשם את הדר ואלבש מהבגדים היפים שבחרת לי אז אקדש ואשיר לך אשת חיל בת מלך אהובה מהמטבח מלא בגאווה ואמזוג לך מעין הברכה בעינך נחת השלווה אשת חי בת מלך אהובה בכל יום שישי עד כמה מוקדם עד כמה שלווה קורנת מאושר מבשלת תופעה ושואלת אותי מתי שעת השקיעה בכל יום שישי את תלבשי בגדים של שבת תדליקי נרות תברכי את כולם ואז אקדש ואשיר אשת חי בת מלך אהובה והמטבח מלא בגאווה ממזוג לך מעין הברכה בעיניי
השלווה. אשת חיל בת מלך אהובה.
Was Chaim Yisrael. Up next, we got time for one more. Can we sneak one in? Yeah, we can sneak one more in. Yeah, my trusty board up, Jason's giving me a thumbs up. This is Hanukkah's is coming up next week. So actually, it's Tuesday night. So this is the Maccabees, Hanukkah Hamilton.
How does a Hasmonean, son of a priest and a Hebrew, raised in a village with his four brothers in a Judean province ruled by Pompus and Antiochus under pressure, grow up to be a hero and commander?
When the king came around, we said this decree's insane, man. We cannot observe our laws while living in our own land. Fight back like your father, don't forget from whence you came. He will call you by a brand new name. What's your name, sir?
Call him Judah Maccabee.
As me, you'll be Greek. No need to fight. Our Hellenism serves you right. You won't miss your Shabbat or circumcision for your thoughts. And if you don't comply, I will send my great Seleucid army and you'll tell history goodbye. La da da da.
Sarah, and now we never vowed about it with statue of Hera. Our teacher Moses passed down a book that is good. Instead we pray to just one God, not an effigy of stone or wood.
2,000 years and while the world's to turn tradition, given his teaching and learning, we keep on reading and yearning. We want to keep the Sabbath in the days that are holy, and can we uphold our tempo ceremony? We pass patiently waiting, we're passionately smashing the invasion. We're taking action on rededication. And though this glory has its fair share of sorrow, today we're gonna fight for tomorrow.
We are not gonna betray our God. We are not gonna betray our God. Hey yo, we don't need permission to keep our great traditions, and we're not gonna betray our God.
And we are not gonna betray our God.
We are not gonna betray our God.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Miketz, Genesis 41 and following. It is always, read in correlation with the holiday of Hanukkah. Sometimes the holiday, there's two Shabbases, and it works out that the second Shabbos is Mikates, but for the most part, Mikates has definitely got what to do with Hanukkah, so there is a connection. Let's look at the beginning of this is a famous Bible story. Joseph had to interpret Pharaoh's dream. Now, we had dreams before with their interpretation. That was in last week's portion, when Joseph had a dream. What was the deal with Joseph's dream? Joseph dreamt that they were bundling sheaves of wheat, and his bundle stood up and their bundles bowed down to him. Whereas Pharaoh dreamt that cows came out of the water, or stalks of grain came out of the water, and other stalks and other cows ate them. What's the essential difference between these two dreams? Because every detail in the Bible is actually important, not just there to add to a story, that God forbid to say that the Torah is a storybook. Joseph's dream implied work. They were working because Joseph's attitude was, we have to work to serve the Almighty. And this is what we learn, the difference between our relationship with the Almighty and, say, like the Egyptians' relationship with the Almighty. With them, they expected everything to be done. But with the Jewish people, we expect everything to be done. Hanukkah, one of the words for the word Hanukkah is Chanukas. This means like a dedication, means to like put things into action, get them to work, do things in order that. This is a connection over here. This dream happened, it said, Mikates at the end. And when we think the word Kates in Judaism, we think Kates Sam L'Choshek, that the prophet Isaiah promised that there would be an end to the darkness. And indeed, we will be lighting the Hanukkah candles, because it says even when Mashiach comes, we'll be keeping Hanukkah this year in Jerusalem. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll find a way, of course, getting in touch with me. You'll find archived editions of the radio show going back 2 years. You'll find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which yours truly conveys Judaism in an hopefully entertaining and educational manner. You'll also find the very important donations page. Okay, we want to thank you very much. We have paid this September. So we're still owing October, November, December. So Salem Communications is okay with that. They, you know, 90 days, they understand. That's like typical corporate extension of whatever, but I don't like doing it. I would really much rather pay off into advance if I could. Because if I do that, then that way I don't sit here and kvetch about you guys going to the computer and going to rabbifinman.com and hitting the donation page and giving a donation of your choice, which we have to go through every single week. But if we pay off 3 months, if we pay off December before the end of December, I don't do that. I tell a longer story, a better story, you might say then. So don't like doing internet giving? No prob. Drop your contribution of any amount, and I mean any amount, to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Speaking of 1725 Pinecrest Drive, put down on your calendar a week from tomorrow, 6 o'clock at 1725 Pinecrest, a Jewish Ferndale building. We'll be having our grand menorah lighting ceremony. There will be a fire artist performer there to entertain you. We'll have live music. We will have, of course, traditional Hanukkah food like latkes and other things to eat and other things to do. And it'll just be beeswax candle making, sponsored by Chazon, that wonderful organization that helps people learn about being mindful and sustainability. That'll be next week, next Monday at 6 p.m. in Ferndale, 1725. We've got a couple of minutes just for this story. Let's see if I can knock this one in. So there was a very wealthy man who lived about 100 years in the city of Baghdad when Baghdad had a beautiful Jewish community. And he would always have people over for his house for Friday night. One night he had one person, and the person was staring at this broken olive oil bottle. They put olive oil bottles in like earthenware back then, before glass. And he was just like staring at it. And so the host, whose name was Reb Chaim, who was a very wealthy man, said, "Let me tell you about that bottle." He said, "I was raised in a religious home. And my father died, and I went to live in my grandfather's house. And every day, my grandfather would bless me as I went off to school. And he would say, 'What will be with me? Where and who am I?'" Which is a line from last week's portion. And I never understood it. And my grandfather died when I was 14. And he ran a very successful business. And I took over the business. And at 14... and I really ran with it. It did really, really well. And so, but the more I got into the business, the less I got involved with my Judaism. Until finally, I couldn't be even recognized. In fact, I once saw a young boy sitting in the street crying. And I said, "What are you crying about?" And he said, "Excuse me, sir." And he used the term for a Persian or for an Iraqi rather than a Jew. He said, "What are you talking about? I'm Jewish." He said, "I'm sorry, you don't look Jewish." So he said, "I come from a poor family. We didn't have any money, but we found one coin to buy a bottle of oil. And tonight is Hanukkah, and I've dropped the bottle. Where am I? Who am I?" He quoted the same verse, and it hit him. He took out money, told him, "Go buy stuff for Hanukkah." And from that point on, when he lit the candles that night, he got back involved with it. That's going to do it. I hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Happy Hanukkah starting Tuesday night. Take care.
48 nights in succession.